simply reordered it, and that's why it's underlined. It's not new.
Representative Mulder.
You said alcohol, you meant tobacco. Excuse me, if I said alcohol, I meant tobacco on number two.
Margot, I have some sympathy with what Representative Navarro was saying in the sense that, you know, we're pushing a pretty big burden on the kids to the extent that kids are going to make more mistakes than adults because they haven't any frame of reference. But yet you're going to be burdening them or saddling them with a long-term record. Especially, I'm sympathetic with your point about their ability to get into the military service. We've got a real problem with kids out in, throughout Alaska being able to get into the National Guard right now because they're being denied because they're of other drug testing problems. So is there some mechanism or is there some alternative to between where we're at right here, where we're at currently, and where this bill takes us? Is there some middle ground?
Through the chair, Representative Mulder, I believe so. And the Department of Law's proposal would be that minor consuming be made a violation as happens in this bill, and that on page 4 of the bill, that only 5B, which is 416.050 relating to possession of consumption, be kept, and that all of the other offenses be deleted from this list of automatic waiver offenses. And the effect of this would be that you would allow minors who are arrested and convicted of the violation of minor consuming to be treated as adults. But as I've said, that's a violation, not a misdemeanor. And it would take out all of these new misdemeanor offenses and keep the status quo with respect to them. And that is something the Department of Law has suggested, and I'm aware that the sponsor has a different philosophical approach to juveniles and does not favor our recommendation.
Representative Guzendar.
Are you done, Representative Elder?
Yes.
Alders, excuse me. Yeah, Margot, one of the things that kind of bothers me in listening to your summary of the bill in the beginning there is that by making these violations, you take away the discretion of the judge to think about alternative ways to handle a given youth. And in some cases, it may be beneficial, or the judge can see it may be beneficial to take this young person, require them to attend certain drug abuse classes or certain things to maybe, through a learning experience, give that person something to think about when he or she is using this particular substance. But now it seems that with this tool gone, we can only rely upon the young person and his their experience with the punishment that was given, not necessarily any positive or suggestions of how to better live your life. And that kind of bothers me, that we seem to be moving away from preventative rehabilitation, simply passing it on to the next level, where maybe at that time one is not too willing to accept a change in lifestyle. What are your thoughts on that, Ed?
Through the chair, Representative Grusendorf, mixed thoughts about it. And on the one hand, it would be good if every young person who abuses alcohol had an opportunity for treatment. At the same time, government's resources are finite and they're becoming more finite. And the cost that would be involved if we were to take in a new group of juveniles and put them through the misdemeanor process for minor consuming, just the cost of prosecuting those cases would be very high. And it's only by prosecuting it as a misdemeanor that the judge gets this ability to require treatment. So your options are rather limited. You either, and then again, if you make it a misdemeanor, you are in the same situation of creating a record for these juveniles that could really present a hardship in their attempts to get on the straight and narrow later on in their life. So we see it as a conflict situation, and with the resources that are available at this point, we think that treating it as a violation is the most cost-effective measure, but in terms of whether there is a sociological consequence of that, I think your analysis is accurate, and there is...
So really what we're pitting is efficiency and cost versus potential rehabilitation. I assume a judge under the present form that we have with misdemeanors wouldn't necessarily recommend to everybody that they take drug treatment.
That is correct.
Because the judge would probably look at an individual, as you have looked at individuals at times, and say, maybe this just might make the difference to this young person. There's others you say, boy, it won't make much difference what I say to this young person. I'm going to see him again a year or two, or if not sooner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brusendorf, what the judge usually does is require alcohol screening and leaves it to experts to determine whether treatment is appropriate or not. I would note that we do have this use-it-lose-it law on the books that applies for minor consuming, and in getting a license back, it could be made a condition before the license is reinstated that the person seek alcohol treatment. But I don't know that there's state funding for that treatment, and I don't know about that.
Okay, well, I guess one thing that's puzzling me about the way that this bill is written is if you look on page 3, the sentence that's all broken up there, the part I'm focusing on is on lines 20 and 21. Where does that even begin? The delinquency rules for minors do not apply, and the minor accused shall be charged, prosecuted, and sentenced in district court in the same manner as an adult. And then I guess I'm wondering... Do we treat the 1171 crimes for adults as violations?
Through the chair, no, we do not. Those are misdemeanors.
And then how does that... It just doesn't make sense to me to say you're going to treat them the same, and yet you're saying they're this level of offense over here, but for adults they're this level of offense. So it seems to me those sentences are just in conflict. Because how can you be treating them the same when they're fundamentally, you're setting up, well, if you commit, you know, you commit this crime, you're an adult, this is the penalty. You commit the same crime, you're a minor, it's a violation.
I think there's perhaps been some misunderstanding. Except for minor consuming, the other offenses listed on page 4 of this bill are misdemeanors, and they would be prosecuted as misdemeanors, and they would result in misdemeanor sanctions. It's only minor consuming that's been reduced to a violation, and it's reduced to a violation in this bill for all offenders.
Okay. So when you say minor consuming, what is that exactly? Is that consumption of alcohol?
Yes.
And where in the bill is that addressed?
It is listed on line 3 on page 4, ASO 4-16050, relating to possession or consumption. That is our minor consuming law.
But where in the bill does it make that a violation?
And it's made a violation on... page 2 in section 1, a person who violates 4-16050A is guilty of a violation upon conviction of the district court. The court may impose a fine of not less than $100. And then you'll see that section 2 is also amended to take out the minor consuming citation, because section 2 is a statute that says violations of the alcohol statutes are class A misdemeanor.
Okay, thank you. I see that.
Representative Navarro.
What effect is not applying the Alaska delinquency rules have?
Through the chairman, Representative Navarro, the effect is to say that you will not go through juvenile delinquency proceedings, and instead you will be treated as an adult and appear in district court.
So, and that happens already, or is that what we're changing?
That is what would be changed for minor consuming, and then for these other misdemeanor offenses that are identified on page 4. It happens already for some of the minor offenses that the sponsor's representative was referring to on the bottom of page 3 of the bill, and those are traffic violations, possession of tobacco. Right now, no matter how old you are, if you are caught smoking and you're underage, you do go through district court proceedings. and it's a violation punishable by a fine. The Fish and Game statutes and regulations and the Parks and Recs statutes and regulations, again, these are, for the most part, violations. There are some misdemeanor offenses that are possible under the Fish and Game statute, but I'm not aware of minors being charged with those rather than the violations.
So I'm still not following the language here. It says the delinquency rules don't apply in these cases where it seems like they don't already apply now.
That's correct, to the extent that what's happening on page 3 is just a drafting change. And if you were to look at lines 10 through 16, you'll see that those same offenses are listed up there. And what the drafter was trying to do was take advantage of this bill that's doing new things with alcohol and drug offenses to clean up the existing statute that, to the extent it's talking about the tobacco offenses, traffic offenses, Fish and Game and Parks and Recs, which do already exist.
But do the delinquency rules apply in any of these cases now?
Yeah. Not the ones that are on page 3. They currently are applying on the offenses that are listed on page 4.
Any other questions? Pleasure of the committee.
1730.
President Brown.
And again, what is the 1730 classes of offenses?
Those are drug offenses, more in the nature of prescription violations. They are, yeah, the regulation of manufacture, distribution, prescription, and dispensing of controlled substances.
Okay, the pleasure of the committee. Let's go, Representative Theriault.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move CS for Senate Bill 46 rules from the committee with the attached fiscal notes with individual recommendations.
Any objection? No objection noted. It's moved from this committee. Okay, we've got SB 117. Next, I'd like to, I don't know how far we're going to get. We've got session at 10. We might stop at either 5 or 10 to 10, and we'll see what this bill does. And who's the sponsor of this?
I'll see what he does.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Stan Ridgway. I'm Deputy Director of Vocational Rehabilitation. Senate Bill 117, which establishes the State Independent Living Council, was introduced by Senator Halford at the request of the Department of Education. In order for Alaska to continue receiving federal funds for independent living, the state must establish in statute a statewide independent living council. At the present time, the state receives approximately $100 million, or has approximately $1 million in the budget for independent living. $900,000 of that is federal money. $602,000 is state money. There's a $39,000 match in the budget to receive those funds. The fiscal note for the operation of the council is attached. It's $142,600 a year. I'd like to point out that this council has been operating now for a little over 2 years. Last year, at the end of the legislative session, an issue was raised by private nonprofit in the community that they had interpreted the Independent Living Council to be an interim board, and to the governor had to reappoint the board last October for the state plan to be valid, and we have requested that it be established in statute, so this won't have to be an ongoing process.
Okay, any questions?
Any motion, sir?
No questions? Representative Terry Mike.
I'd like to move that Senate Bill 117 be out of committee with individual recommendations.
Any objection? No objection noted, then it's moved out of this committee. I appreciate your time today.
Okay.
HCR 19. Okay, HCR 19. We'll see how far we get with this one.
And I predict, Mr. Chairman, we'll get far.
Okay, Mulder.
maybe we won't.
Sponsor, if you want to go ahead and...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I won't talk long about it, but we just had another crime bill go through here today. We've had probably a dozen this year. It just spotlights the fact that we've got the tiger by the tail right now in relation to the Department of Corrections. We've got a growing population threatening to grow, to expand exponentially, and we don't have adequate bed space in the future to deal with the problem. I think it's important, Mr. Chairman, that we look at this cooperatively between the legislature, between the administration, and the affected municipalities, and also outside contractors who have an interest in where the state is going to go in relation to incarcerating our state's prison population. I think it's foolish for just the administration to go forward on their own without some legislative participation. Likewise, I think it's foolish for the legislature to come up with a plan without some administrative, you know, participation, because it's a cooperative effort. I think through the establishment of a task force directed to accomplish that objective through this interim, that and report back next session, that we can come up with a plan and provide some insight or provide some leadership and some direction for the state in relation to how we're going to tackle this problem. And through the process, I anticipate we'll explore all the avenues or all the possibilities, from expanding our current facilities to totally liquidating our prison facilities into the private sector and allowing them to be run by totally by private sector individuals. I think, you know, we need to look at the full range of options. Part of the fiscal note will be to hire an independent contractor to do an evaluation of our prison system, to look for efficiencies, also to make recommendations about how we can streamline our process and to cut costs, and also to make recommendations about expanded facilities. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would recommend, I know the department has submitted a $350,000 fiscal note. I believe, Mr. Chairman, that it can be done for far less. I think $200,000 is probably a reasonable amount to be able to pay for an outside contractor, as well as pay for an additional employee to help coordinate this effort. I appreciate the department's cooperation with this. I expect that when this thing moves to the floor, that the commissioner and I are still talking about coming up with a serious or preliminary report and then a final report. And I anticipate that when this comes to the floor, we'll have an agreement about the exact wording and timing about that, so I wouldn't like to hold up the bill right now. Her concern is that we have sufficient time to make, to do a complete review of the process, and that the things that need to be addressed immediately will be contained in the preliminary report, and the final report would not be, and that would be due somewhere around the 1st of March next year, or in that time frame, maybe March 15th, and then the final report to be due sometime in the middle of next year. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd entertain any questions.
Representative Brown.
Thank you. I do appreciate the work that we've done in the subcommittee, and I did co-sponsor this piece of legislation. And one concern that I have about it, Mr. Chairman and Representative Mulder, is on page 2, lines 6 and 7. And looking at this carefully, how it's drafted, I guess it would be my recommendation that we not predispose what the elements of the comprehensive plan are. And we do cover that same subject down below on lines 26 and 27. So I'm in support of reviewing those options, but the way this is worded here, its placement, seems like we're predetermining that the plan will include these options for private construction and private operation. And I guess to me, a comprehensive plan would more indicate, you know, here's the roadmap we're going to follow, and the analysis would be, you know, looking at the range of possibilities. And I guess I just don't feel that we know enough yet to conclude that private operation is a good idea. I think there are, you know, certainly some encouraging possibilities in terms of the construction. And in my mind, those are really different in how the, you know, I mean, it, I think many more questions arise when you're talking about turning over the operation. So I'm wondering, would you be receptive to deleting that phrase, including options and so forth, since that's covered below? And just say we're going to develop a comprehensive plan?
Sure, that doesn't, that's, Mr. Chairman, I consider that a friendly amendment. I included that purely upon the basis of conversation with other members in the committee and the commissioner, so I'm not predisposed to that language.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, then I'd move that we delete that clause beginning with including options for down to the semicolon on line 7.
Any objection? No objection noted. It's passed.
Mr. Chairman, I would also move behind the sponsor statement is an amendment. Now, for purposes of proposing it, just call it amendment number 2. Consider Representative Brown's amendment number 1. The reason we need this amendment is within the composition. We needed to, okay, if you look at where it goes, page 2, line 13. After selected. Okay. For private individuals to be involved with the task force, we have members from the administration, we have members from the legislature, and we have members from the outside. This is very similar to the long-range task force. In fact, that's how we kind of came up with the wording. So that we had participation at all three levels. This change was recommended by the drafter to say, listen, if you're trying to get the balance that you're looking for, this is probably what you should do. So what this will allow for is the commissioner or the governor to select a person from the private sector, the speaker, and the Senate president.
Representative Farnell.
And with that, I would move the amendment.
I'll just object for purpose of discussion. Because I'm not going to have a problem with the amendment, but I want to ask what is going, or what's motivating having a task force composed of public and private members on this issue? Because as I look at what they're going to do, 1, 2, 4, and 5 on page 2, those look like things that you could give $100,000 to an accountant to do and get an independent objective review of it without taking up everybody else's time, and then we could take it up in the legislature. I think 3 is certainly a little different area and that would require some expertise, but I just wonder what was the motivation behind a task force composed of public and private representatives as opposed to just giving the Department of Corrections money for a contractor to go do this.
Right, and which is what they proposed in the beginning. Okay. Yeah, they proposed just having $350,000 in the capital budget, and they came up with a comprehensive plan. First off, I didn't think that my funding would be there in the capital budget. Second reason is I think you have a far greater likelihood of some cooperation in the future if you buy the legislature in or if you buy the administration in, if you cooperatively work on approach. But if one side comes in with a plan and says, by golly, we're going to privatize the prison system in Alaska, the administration doesn't want to do it, it's not going to happen. You know, you have to have some sort of consensus. And likewise, there's a very valid private industry is the wave of the future in relation to prisons. Throughout the country, whereas most things in state government don't lend themselves toward privatization, this is one area that really does, and it's growing exponentially in the lower 48. And it was felt that even though these people, that there could be involvement, and it doesn't say that they have to be involved with prisons at all. It could be hospitals, it could be unions, it could be whatever, just in terms of managing a large organization and facility. Making it run efficiently. That's the basic philosophy behind having people involved who have a private sector background on how to make efficiencies and make a ship run efficiently.
Do you envision the task force hiring a contractor to perform the tasks at 1 through 5 and then basically looking at the report and coming up with their own recommendations? Based on that analysis,
I anticipate that they will hire an outside contractor. I also anticipate that we'll have some hearings around the state. You know, from this group, there'll probably be a smaller working group that does the majority of the work, and they'll act as a sounding board, meeting several, 2-3 times. But the smaller working group will work quite a bit. You know, having hearings throughout the state, trying to get feedback from the population, what they want, what they anticipate, what level of protection they're willing to pay for.
Okay, Representative Terry Martin.
And looking at the fiscal note here, I don't know whose handwriting that is, but it seems I've seen that before. So I don't know if $200,000 is correct at all, but basically there's well over $1,000 a day for this task force, and it's good that they're going to report during the next session at the end. I wonder if we can knock that down, because you have 13 people on the committee, basically at the very most gives you 7 months to work, and that's over $1,000 a day. I don't know if you could spend that much. I hope not. But even with the per diem, it's not broken down what personnel that you use. So the fiscal note, even though it's just $200,000 miscellaneous, it doesn't really tell us that much who's going to run it. If your staff is going to be the lead on that, a lot of times that is life. You know, your normal staff has to manage the course of activity for the summer, and we're not back. So I was wondering how much heartburn you'd have to have to cut back to something small. $500 a day would give you $100,000.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Martin, I'm not wed to the number. I know the department has a fiscal note here as well prepared that's $350,000. And part of the reason it's a large number is the fact that we've talked with several folks who are in this business about what is a reasonable number to expect for doing an evaluation and hiring an outside contractor to do this evaluation. And the estimates were anywhere from $75,000 to $150,000 to do an analysis, and up from there. So I tried to be somewhat conservative and ballpark it at about $100,000, and provide for one staff person approximately $75,000, then some interim meetings at about $25,000, and that's how we came up with the number.
Yeah. Arnell, Martin, and Navarre.
And I want to move this out, because I think it is a good piece. I mean, something needs to be done, but why would we not put most of that money under contractual as opposed to miscellaneous?
I think, Representative Parnell, Mr. Chairman, my staff and I are not adept at writing fiscal notes.
Here's a quickie.
I think it allows for maximum flexibility.
There is another fiscal note. Did you see it?
Right. Yeah, that's the department.
I didn't see that one here.
We're not doing the department?
Well, we can either take the departments or we can do... we had prepared one. Mr. Chairman, the reason we had prepared one, we had not received the department's fiscal note, I think, until last night. We didn't know. This morning, excuse me. We didn't know if the department was going to have one or not, so we took the liberty of preparing one of what we thought would be appropriate amount of money.
Would you be opposed?
Mr. Chairman, I can understand, and I think it would be far cheaper if the committee did it, without a doubt, but I'd also like to put up a thumb of caution that if you contract, then you may really find yourself in problems. We do that a number of times with legislative budget and audit, but we make sure that's an honorable contract and a job can be done at less than $25,000. It just seems to me for a committee like this, you can find some good people for under $25,000 to give you a very good overview of Alaska's corrections.
Mr. Chairman, Bob Cole from the Department of Corrections.
Okay, let me go on to Navarre. And then Brown here, and then he could ask me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to point out that the department's budget is $39,000 going up, and that the potential for finding ways to increase savings, I guess, and what the projected increase within that department are, makes perfect sense, and that in order to do that, they're going to need a consultant to data and suggestions and analysis of them. I just think that, you know, that what we're talking about here is planning. What this legislature has done for the last 10 years, state government, is take away planning money within the departments. That's what we've been doing. And so we can reduce this down to whatever, I guess, Representative Martin thinks is adequate. When I don't expect that other than his time in the legislature, he probably hasn't spent much time in planning at all. And that short funding, all it's likely to result in is an insufficient plan or opportunity for developing a comprehensive plan, and it just doesn't make much sense. I mean, we're talking about, with the fiscal note the way that it is, the departments, I think we're talking about probably about 0.2% of their budget planning.
Representative Brown.
Thank you. I just wanted to briefly bring up a new issue. And what makes me think of this is comments that Representative Martin made when we were looking at the gaming task force and its composition. So just to get right to the heart of it, I'd like to propose for your consideration that on line 13, after the word organizations, we add the words who do not have a financial interest in the issues to be addressed, comma. And, Mr. Chairman, my reason for proposing that is that I think I agree with what Representative Parnell said. We want an independent, objective review. We would like the report to have credibility. I think that'll be more the case if we don't have people with a direct financial interest driving the report. And I fully welcome those people to participate. I just don't think they need to be named members. So I'd so move that we add who do not have a financial interest in the issues to be addressed after the word organizations on page 2, line 13.
And okay, what was the amendment earlier? I remember Parnell objected.
Well, I think I have an amendment on the floor, Mr. Chairman. To adopt amendment number 2.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll hold my motion.
Okay, any objection to amendment number 2? Is it maintained, Representative Parnell?
No.
Okay, no objection being heard. Amendment number 2 is adopted. Now, Representative Brown.
So I move amendment number 3 at page 2, line 13, to address the issue of the financial, trying to avoid the public members having a direct financial interest in the outcome of this study.
Jeff, a question.
Representative Parnell.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown, I can see your point, but it seems to me that at bottom we want the independent consultants at lines 15 and 16 to be the ones who are truly independent. I would just assume that I want independent consultants who have no financial, no stake in the outcome of it. So I'm just curious if you think that language independent means that, or whether we should put your language at lines 15 and 16.
Well, I wouldn't object to having it lines 15 and 16.
I mean,
but I'm thinking also of these public members who are going to be appointed by the, you know, by the administration and the speaker and the president. That it would make sense. I mean, Representative Mulder has said those people don't have to be, you know, involved in the private corrections system now. I just think it would be a more objective report if you did not have someone on the task force who had a clear interest in how what the outcome should be.
Mr. Chairman, the converse side of that is there are a fair number of public employees who have a fair amount of interest involved in what the outcome of the decisions will be in relation to privatization versus maintaining its public nature. So, I mean, I'm real sympathetic with what you're saying, but there is a vested interest in the opposite direction existing.
Let's see, before we go on to Martin and then Kelly, I wonder, sir, if you wanted to make some comments.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, I'm Bob Cole. I'm the Administrative Director for the Department of Corrections. There are just two or three quick comments. One is that we had extensive subcommittee hearings on our budget this year in both houses, and the consensus of opinion was that we have to do something, that there's a joint interest in between the legislative and executive branch in finding out how in the world we're going to accommodate ever-increasing cost of imprisonment. And when we went out to visit Lemon Creek facility, for an example, Representative Mulder, there was one young gentleman in there ironing shirts in the laundry, and I turned, fairly normal-looking fellow, and I turned around and talked to the superintendent and asked him what he was in there for. He was in there for 99 years for bludgeoning his girlfriend to death, which means he's on first-degree murder charge. It takes a minimum of 33 years before he's eligible for parole, and I sat down and did a quick calculation on the state's unfunded future obligation for that one individual was something like $1,724,000 in present value. So you multiply that by 2,600 prisoners at the felony level, their annual cost extrapolated out in time, you get in some very big numbers. That doesn't begin to touch the misdemeanor issue. We've got several thousand more misdemeanors flowing in and out of the system every year. There were issues that came up about the relative responsibility of local communities and the state with respect to misdemeanors, especially because we have a unified prison system in this state for the most part. And unlike most other jurisdictions around the country, there's a hidden not a hidden, but a visible and agreed to historically subsidy from the state of Alaska to local communities that amounts to several tens of millions of dollars a year to handle local prisoners. So there are a lot of issues to unravel here with huge future financial implications for the state. And the language of the resolution is very similar to what we had originally written in our capital budget request. We worked a lot with our subcommittee. Representative Mulder was chairman. Representatives Brown and Navarre were on there, so they're familiar with all those discussions. This is the kind of project you could spend anywhere from $100,000 to $1 million on and take anywhere from 1 to 5 years. $350,000 was our best guess about a frankly modest sum of money to spend on the project, given the implications. And with $200,000, our only big concern really is what Representative Mulder spoke about earlier, and that was allowing some opportunity for extending the time frame so that we've got more time to get the work done. With respect to hiring the contractor, it's our expectation that whoever is hired to do the analytic work for the committee would be someone who clearly has no interest in the outcome and is divorced from any benefit from the process at all. On the membership issue, I'll let you all
decide. Hey, Representative Martin and then Kelly.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's not like reinventing the wheel. There's many states that have had these studies and a great report from NCSL. That's one of the first organizations I'd call to have a conclusion. And we've seen them from other national organizations. So Alaska is different, but it's not that different how you take care of your prisoners and how you can take care of your prisoners. I'm very sympathetic for Representative Brown amendment, but I kind of agree with Representative Parnell that we absolutely want this arm-length final evaluation of a group of contact, maybe Pete Marbeck and Mitchell, some audit group. And here again, NCSL can guide us to non-partial groups that are experts on this. So there's ways of getting to those who have gone through the hard way and probably the expensive way to do a prison study, and we can capitalize on that individual or group, professional group, at a minimum price.
Yeah. Okay. Kelly, Parnell, amendment.
I'll pass.
Parnell.
Mr. Chairman, I think at lines 15 and 16, I've looked at it some more. It says should contract with independent consultants. I think that should be self-explanatory, that they have no direct financial stake in it. That takes care of my concern as I looked at it further. On the membership issue, I don't have a problem with leaving the language as it is now. Either way, I mean, we can accept or reject the recommendations when they come for whatever reasons. And I think that the members will do the best job that they can with the information they have.
Walter and Ontario.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I would agree with just what Representative Parnell said, and would hope that Representative Brown would consider it. Back. I mean, I have no predisposition about who would even be on the membership, but I just don't. I mean, keeping the hands open for the Speaker, the Governor, and the Senate President about appointing whoever they want, and to insert that, I don't think is really necessary.
Okay, I withdraw that motion. Mr. Chairman, can I ask another question?
Okay, Brown and Ontario.
Do you intend to point minority and majority representation?
Yes.
Should we say that? Didn't we say that in the fiscal policy resolution that it would be majority and minority?
I don't think it's necessary. I mean, that's I was going to have one at first, and I thought, well, that's silly. You need to have minority and majority.
With that understanding, I won't move that amendment.
Yeah, it's not intended. Mr. Chairman, I would move amendment number 4.
Okay, let me get Perio first, okay. And then Martin.
Please,
and
I want to move something I didn't want to talk about.
Okay, Perio.
Well, with regard to the independent consultants, I know that a number of years ago the department did contract with out-of-state consultants. They did a study on placements and when you're overcrowded and whatnot. The person that did that work is on the board of directors of the firm that we're now contracting for outside prison space. And I don't think there was any violation or corruption there, but it doesn't look good. And I really think that if we could really specify that we don't want that appearance of impropriety to be the added result of,
I agree.
It doesn't look good.
If you have,
Kelly,
are we limiting ourselves when we do this to the, it seems like there's a finite number of experts out there, and if there is some project in the future, that could be very beneficial to them. They're not going to want to join in the task force because they'll automatically be eliminating themselves. I wonder if we're limiting ourselves.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is going to be one of a minority representation at best of three. If they all had a vested interest, and I don't think the governor, the speaker, and then the Senate president are all going to appoint people with vested interests. I just think the whole point of it was to have somebody from the outside who had experience running big institutions. I agree, this is a small state, and there's going to be a balance in the entire sector. Sure, you're going to shoot holes at any report because there are going to be people on one side or the other that aren't going to like the outcome. I mean, I'll guarantee that. So it doesn't matter what you do. Either the public employees or the private contractors aren't going to like what you recommend, unless you have some sort of balance, which I hope we can create in it.
Is there an amendment on the floor?
Mr. Chairman, with that, I would like to move amendment number 4, which does that wording that I didn't realize we had it drafted in time, but it does show that we have a preliminary report to address the immediate needs, and then a final report, which will be due August 31st, 1996.
I'd object.
Representative Martin.
I really thought having the report on the original date here in January of next year, 31st, would give the current legislators some input, some direction in doing affirmative action. Now we're going to delay it, and so it's just a preliminary report, and then we delay it. That's going to be 14 months. And for this group here that put so much time and effort into it, who knows who's going to be in charge the next time? And it's a preliminary report. Let's do something positive, get it done. As we said before, it's not reinventing the wheel. You don't need another year or 2 years or 10 years.
Representative Mulder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are elements that we can accomplish, Representative Martin, and I agree with you. I mean, I put that number, that date in there specifically because I want it to be addressed next legislature. After talking with Mr. Cole and the commissioner, there are elements of the study that do need, that will take longer to accomplish. They're going to require time in terms of the comprehensive review about each of the prisons. It just takes time to go through the prison system and evaluate it all. After consulting with them, they agreed upon the fact that there are some things that we can address immediately. They'll be contained in the preliminary report and addressed as such. And the more long-term things that take more time to evaluate, will be contained in the final comprehensive report. And so this is a compromise.
Mr. Cole.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Martin, one example of that, I think, is the fact that we're bound by three bargaining agreements with three different unions to do, and I suspect the unions will challenge us on the quality of cost-benefit analysis if one of the decisions that the task force makes is that some chunk of corrections need to be privatized. We're bound by these three different union agreements to do a definitive cost-benefit analysis of that. I strongly suspect that would not be possible to get done by next session of the legislature, so that's just an example of an issue I think that will take a little more time.
Okay, objection maintained?
Yes.
Okay, sir.
Representative Martin.
No.
Representative Mulder?
Yes.
Representative Barr?
Yes.
Representative Parnell?
Yes.
Representative Brown?
Yes.
Representative Kelly?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
Yes. Okay, now getting back to all this stuff here with Representative Brown, was there a conceptual amendment you're going to offer?
Mr. Chairman, I withdrew that suggestion in light of our discussion and the expressed intentions of what's happening. And I would like to see this move forward, and if people still want to address it on the floor, we can always have that option. And right. If you're ready for a motion.
Yes, ma'am, I am. Representative, okay, Parnell.
On the fiscal note, before we do this, I would like to see it go back to contractual unless there's a strong objection.
No objection.
$200,000 on the contractual line for what it's worth.
Any objection?
Just to reflect what it's really going to be used for.
Okay with that.
You don't want to go with $350?
No supplemental.
Okay, now, where were we?
Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we pass out HCR 19 with individual recommendations with the amended $200,000 fiscal note and the committee amendments as adopted.
Any objection? No objection noted, and it's moved out of this committee. I think we're out of bells, and we'll be back at 1:30 session permitting. Thank you.
Oh, this is